Welcome to Spaghetti Launchers, the wobbling podcast where we throw spaghetti at the wall and it's up to you what sticks. I'm Kyle.
I'm Ethan. First things first, before we get into it, we are, since it is Mother's Day when we're recording this, happy Mother's Day to all of the mothers in our audience today.
Especially mine, who does listen to this podcast.
Yeah, mine does not, but that's okay. Happy Mother's Day, Mom. Anyway, on today's episode, we, in through no relation whatsoever, we'll be discussing empires. But in this case, we're going to be discussing empires that expand their influence through non-militaristic, non-violent means. They do not conquer. They do not pillage. They do not engage in siege warfare. They engage in more creative, liberal arts empires, you might say.
And I'm leaving violence on the table in that, like, as long as it's not mass, like, we've gone and conquered you with an army.
Yeah.
And this was a lot inspired by me paying a lot of Crusader Kings 3. And I was just assassinating every leader I could because my character was good at assassinating. So I was like, I'll just assassinate everybody. Yeah. And I was like, well, I'm gaining a lot of power through doing this. And I'm not raising an army ever. But I'm gaining position. And then I was like, why don't we just do something based on that? So like in the real world, there's great examples of this. Like the Habsburgs are famous for having just married off into every, major house of Europe.
And that was also the plan that Duke Leto had in Dune at the beginning. That was what started it off. Yeah, he wanted to raise up soldiers that were as good as the Emperor's Sadakar to force the Emperor to marry him to his daughter. That's why he never married the Lady Jessica.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Conquest
through marriage is real.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Totally real.
We're also seeing a lot in this day and age, like conquest through economics. I mean, that's kind of old, but
yeah, it's old school.
But we're also seeing a lot of cultural dominance and cultural empires, spreading of values through media.
Soft power.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the U.S. is an empire today, largely through influence and soft power. And through, NATO.
And similarly, China is growing in a using similar forces as well. I mean, just very simply, the influence that it has over movie studios, say like Marvel, is huge. And like the fact that we need to cater to a Chinese audience, that so many media companies need to cater to Chinese audiences, is evidence.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and when they're using militarism, but like look at something like the South China Sea, where it's like, hey, we're just building islands, we're just building our own territory and then using it. And they're building it to build bases so they can, posture and maybe conquer other stuff. But just that idea of like, we're going to expand our borders by just making more land to be on.
Yeah.
We're not taking from anybody. We're just like, oh yeah, well, we just created new land. That's for us. Like, we stay in a volcano.
We love volcano.
If you control volcanoes and use the volcanoes to just make a bunch of new islands for you, be like, well, that's now our land. We're going to go occupy that. Mm-hmm. That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah.
What's your favorite empire in media, in like fiction? Because every fantasy world has an empire. Sci-fi world has an empire. Empires are everywhere because they are really interesting story creators. Well,
every world has an empire because empires, you're right, they're fun. They're also easy. I think it's also interesting, and it says something about the human condition that so many people think that society will just over time naturally evolve into an empire.
I mean, historically, that's kind of been the case.
Yeah.
Well, and to your point of it, it's easy. When I think about that, that's an interesting point, because if you're world building and you have, if you want a big enough, if you want like a sizable land that you're working with, plop an empire down and you don't have to come up with the governance and the structures of a lot of that land. It's all under this empire, and you go, oh, that's easy.
Yeah.
And then you can, rather than be like, oh, well, we have 1500 little fiefdoms, that's going to be really insufferable to do,
right?
And no one cares at that point,
right?
But if you're just like, well, there's one empire and it covers a lot of this land that we're going to play in,
right,
that the story can be told in, but like, I want to have this location and this location and this location and this location, just put it all under one empire, so I don't have to figure out four kingdoms or whatever. So it's very easy for that.
Yeah. So with that said, I mean, I think the one that always comes to mind for me is obviously Palpatine's empire. I mean, that was the first one that I saw growing up as a kid. I think it sort of informed everything. The idea of the Emperor as the...
You love your Star Wars.
Yeah, we love my Star Wars. But if I think about what is probably the most creative, do you remember the Animorph series, the book series from like back in the mid to late 90s?
No.
It was a really cool story. And in it, they had an empire that was, it was sort of like the Mind Flayers in Baldur's Gate, where they would implant worms. It was a, the entire species was like a species of worms, right? And they would move into and take over people's bodies as hosts, but they had their own distinct personality. So it wasn't like you'd still be Kyle, like an evil version of Kyle.
Yeah.
You would be, I think the main bad guy was called like Visser 3, it just in Kyle's body. Huh. And I always thought that was cool, like, because it was such a small creature that ended up having this massive empire.
Yeah.
Because of who they took over. And I just thought that was interesting.
It's like conquering, or by just taking over people's bodies.
Yeah. I mean, like, so it's sort of like Invasion of the Body Snatchers, but yeah, they built an entire empire out of it. And yeah, so the empire itself, you know, when we normally think of empires, we think of them as very like monochromatic, right? Like everyone's in the standard military, probably Nazi inspired suits and uniforms.
Yeah.
This empire looked, everyone looked different because they were all representative. Because they had all taken over different, like their leaders had all taken over different, incredibly powerful species.
Yeah.
And I thought that was, in fifth grade reading this, I was like, that's cool. Like that's really neat.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was my favorite. What about yours?
I don't know that I have one that comes to mind as like my favorite fictional empire. Hmm. I think there's so many good ones, but they're often they're so similar sometimes, which they run together and aren't fun.
Yeah,
where it's like, oh yeah, cool. Another I think that the standard evil empire is monotonous and boring.
I agree.
We watched part two of Rebel Moon yesterday. If you remember a while back, we watched part one and we had lots of world building thoughts, and it was so bad. But I think it would have been made a lot better if like the bad guys weren't just generically like evil empire. And you're like, okay, we know. And like, also we've been there. It's boring.
Been some sort of technological consistency. Like, why do they have faster than light communication, but they're still using fucking periscopes to position their lasers? It makes no sense.
Yeah, the whole thing's bad. But my point being, I think oftentimes it's just, and like why I want to have this conversation is because empires feel too one note.
Yeah.
And look at something like in Forgotten Realms, the Wizards of Thay.
Mm.
They're an evil empire. Mm-hmm. It's like a
majocracy.
A majocracy evil empire that is really interesting. Like if you watch the D&D movie, the Honor Among Thieves, when they show the scenes in
Zaztam,
and it's like, oh shit, this is a vibe that's a dark empire done right.
So tell me your menu description, Kyle.
My noodles for today are...
It's today's special.
Illusionist Doomsday.
Illusionist Doomsday. Interesting. Mine, I don't know how to put it into three words. I've been struggling with that.
You can have four. I only took two.
Web of contracts. Okay. I don't know how else to put it.
Okay. I'll go first.
Yeah.
There's manipulation involved in every empire on some level.
Yeah. Otherwise, there's that whole resistance and rebellion thing.
Yeah. Like, you have to manipulate people, and there's... And I wanted to go full manipulation, full trickery. But in a way that isn't like, oh, like the word contract, which this might be in yours. It's like, oh, it's not like we tricked you with a bad contract.
Right.
That we tricked you into fully believing we were who you needed in this moment.
Yeah.
By using every culture that they're like, you know, you have an empire that is expanding.
Mm-hmm.
And by like fully understanding what a culture is, what its religious beliefs are,
mm-hmm,
and figuring out what scares that culture the most, and understanding it thoroughly, and then using agents of the state and getting local conspirators, you know, or not, but creating like signs and omens and like feeding narrative.
Bene Gesserit.
Yes. Oh yeah. Oh, as I was thinking it through more, I was like, this is super Bene Gesserit.
Super Bene Gesserit. And I love it. Like, because of that, I love it.
Yeah. And it's creating all the signs that like out of nothing, like not spreading word that like, oh, they're here, but like say there is some sort of, apocalyptic, thing in that, you know, the religious texts, putting out all the signs that that apocalypse is coming.
Right.
And which I guess is what Benhazer did. This is very Benhazer right now. I'm thinking about it.
No, but it's interesting, yeah. Because.
But it's actively using it not as a way to foment concern,
right.
And doubt that the, because you are at the same time undermining the authorities of that country,
right.
However you want.
Correct.
It can be through assassination. It can be through discord. It can be through setting seductress people in there to mm-hmm. like make sure that they can't do anything, do their job, whatever it is, so that they can't solve whatever it is that's creating this tension in the populace. Mm-hmm. And then you can, like, at the edge of that realm without an army, but just like send your, like, you have some priests there being like, oh, I think we can help.
Yeah.
And just start to create a bleeding of the lines of the borders.
Yeah.
Of, oh, we'll provide aid to these local people at the fringes because they're super concerned that they're not getting their needs met, but we can help. We're here. And they just slowly erode. Like, it's not it's a slow erosion of, like, village by village of, we no longer recognize our king. We recognize the emperor over here because the emperor is actually helping us deal with the doomsday that's coming. And now that we've sided with them, we see none of the signs. They're gone.
Kyle, this is tech sales.
Is it tech sales?
This is convincing people that they are suffering from a problem that you then help them with.
Oh, yeah, because you've created the problem.
You've created the problem.
Yeah.
Either that or pharma sales.
Fair enough. It's a lot of sales. In which
case, your drug might have actually caused the condition that your new drug now solves.
A little bit, yeah.
But
it's a good point.
Yeah, but it is sort of. But that is a very effective sales technique, right? Is like, how do you identify this challenge, and then center that challenge in your client, in your target, in your constituents, in your subjugants, and then position yourself as the solution.
Well, and to turn it up on like the fantastical side of things. My initial thought was bombastic spectacles with magic, mm-hmm. to say we like this empire has a lot more access to and control over magic. So they are doing like, they're showing great beasts in the sky that are like, you know, swooping down and coming for, because you could amp it up even further,
yeah, yeah.
And just say they've made an illusion of a large, deity-like figure or a huge dragon coming in, and then mm-hmm. like from like near the border, and then the empire crosses the border with some troops to go defeat right. this threat,
the thing, yeah,
the threat that they have conjured,
yeah.
or is manned by them, and then those people yeah. around there are like, oh, our heroes. So it doesn't have to necessarily be we've invented like these omens of a thing, the full Bene Gesserit. You could do it with spectacle and say,
sure.
there's an active issue here where like,
it's like, what's that? There's that condition like cops and firefighters will have it sometimes, or like you hear it, like it's an SVU, like there are a million SVU and like Criminal Minds episodes about it, where like the firefighter will start fires so that
they can put it out. Yeah. Like a hero's.
Yeah. It's like a hero complex or something like that. Yeah. There's a term for it, but it is like a real world psychological condition.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Like it could be a hero's complex thing as well. It's work. Like we're starting the problem and like take it up even further. They start using a volcano and they can manipulate it and have it start erupting. And then guess who comes in with their giant eagles mm-hmm. to swoop in and save you from the fire.
Right.
Not your king, but the yeah. neighboring empire.
Yeah.
Because they're humanitarians in right. a way. And, you know, like I say that with a fake differential bow. They are definitely like, they definitely didn't start the fire. They definitely didn't create this natural disaster.
It was always burning
yeah.
since the world's returning.
So like anything that you could think of that they are just manipulating the population to want to turn, because the only way that king stays in power is if, you know, they have some support, because it's not like the king can stand up to the neighboring empire that easily, especially if the local population is like, nah, we'd rather hang out with the empire. You've been a shitty king. And then like they have no power base. They're losing it.
I think I want to zero this in, because there's a lot as a tactic. You could execute this many, many ways.
Yes.
I want to zero in on this and have it be purely based in illusion magic.
Yeah.
I don't want it to be...
That was my initial thought, and then I forgot to pitch that right away.
Yeah, no. I think the illusion magic is important because, you read stories, this happens in comic books a lot, where like, oh, there's this psychic, right? You know, a telepath who convinces people of that there are things. And it's like, yeah, but that also borders on mind control.
Yeah.
And I think that's less interesting, is like creating circumstances that make people actually voluntarily give up their own independence.
Yes.
I think that's like, that's less interesting to me.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think let's lean in on the illusion of it all. There is a great beast coming. There is an army marching. Mm-hmm. We create an illusion that there's an army marching from the north. Mm-hmm. And we are your eastern border. We are your eastern neighbors, but we will fend them off. Mm-hmm. We will dispatch them as best as we can because we don't want them invading you or us. And then it's just an army marching into a field to fight nothing and just like fake fighting for a bit.
Yeah.
And then, like setting a big fire so that all the bodies are burned, quote unquote.
Yeah.
And then they just head back.
Yeah. It would be incredibly powerful illusion magic.
Yeah. It's
because you would have to simulate smell, touch, like you'd have to simulate all five senses.
Yeah.
It couldn't just be visual because that would, you could see through that pretty quickly.
Because imagine the amount of resources you'd be devoting to that, because it's either fund an entire army campaign, all the food, all the soldiers, all the logistics that would be going to that, or pay, you know, a small contingent of very talented illusion mages and some other people to quickly do these things.
Right.
And not have a sustained effort. Just like
you could have, again, I'm always thinking in D&D terms, but you could have a couple people go down, get killed, you know, theatrically sacrifice themselves in the battle, and then the cleric comes around and just does revivify on all of them after everyone's gone away and brings them back to life so they can go and do it again.
Oh yeah, that's really clever. Yeah, like really just put on shows.
Yeah.
And say you have you have an army that is a very small army, but they're all professional soldiers, but also professional actors. They've all been trained heavily in the theater arts. Yeah. So they're going in and they're pretending to be bandits, pretending to be like barbarians at the gates or whatever. And then the rest of your soldiers go through and kill them and then drag the bodies to be burned. And they like, you know, they're like, oh, but this isn't for the women and children to see. We will burn them. We will bury them away from you. Waiting over the crest of that hill is a bunch of clerics.
Here
like,
comes cleric
back, get back. Yeah. And then everyone's like, oh, okay. And then they just scurry home.
You could have internal, like in some fun with it internally. Like what did you draw this week? Oh, I'm a raider again. Like I've been a raider the past three territories.
Yeah.
Like I'm tired of this. I want to be the hero for once. Like you don't get the role that you wanted.
There's something in there about like the narratives of history and he who controls the messaging like, you know, wins the war or something.
Yeah.
That, you know, you are inventing wars and inventing narratives fully.
Yeah.
You know, like imagine having like the major general is a playwright as well. Like that's like, that's their job. It's like orchestrating all these moving
the
pieces. It's move all these pieces and really like have to tell the story that will convince the local population that, you know, to like tip them over the edge into wanting to jump ship or whatever. But you can also use the same technique against the state authorities there and say like, there is a bigger threat coming. We will stop it for you if you, you know, like pledge fealty and join the empire. Yeah. And some local king is like, has to give in because they're under the illusion that there is the biggest army of all time is coming for them.
Right.
You know, from across the seas.
Yeah.
And some shit. And then it's really just illusions of Leviathans being like summoned by the fucking empire from like out in the sea.
Illusions of meteors coming, harbingers of doom.
Yeah. Cause they could always just make it seem as if there's, all right. So say you're doing the illusion thing and it's that, oh, it must be that the emperor is ordained by the gods. They are chosen to save us and every other territory that the empire isn't controlling is under threat because they are angering the gods by not letting the empire rule them. And
it's not the empire's gods. It's the
local gods.
Right.
It's whatever gods just full stop. And like any god, any whatever being you believe in,
yeah,
these omens are a sign that you need to give in, because there's none of those omens. There are no meteor storms coming towards the Empire shores. Yeah. They're coming towards your shores, because you're quote unquote living in sin. Mm. You need to join the Empire. Right. And the second you do, the meteor storms stop. They must have been actually just a symbol from the, or a signal from the gods that you needed to change your behavior.
Yeah. I like the idea. I'm intrigued by the mechanics of how would you gather this information? And I think it's something, there would have to be someone living in, like, some sleeper agent type person living in the society, understanding the culture, understanding the religion, understanding everything, and giving all of that information back to the Empire.
Yeah.
And I just think that I'm thinking about who that person might be. Like, what role would they operate in society? Would they be in a position of power? You know, sort of like Luthen from
Andor.
From Andor, or would they be, you know, like a tailor, you know, or someone, or a shopkeeper, someone who just listens and blends in shopkeeper?
I think I said
with the rest of the populace.
I said at the top, but just like agents of the state, you just send them in, like a small contingent of spies who embed themselves everywhere. Mm. And you collect the various stories. Because if you just had one single point, or one single person, that's a point of failure. But if you have, if you send 25 agents in who are all
still actors.
Yes, but they're like tradesmen of some kind. Like one of them is a tailor who goes in and is a tailor for, you know, the royalty or aristocracy. You have one who is just like, goes and cleans buckets at a temple, and it's just like as lowly as they could be, so they can be a fly on the wall. Yeah. One is it works in a tavern in a small village. Yeah. They can hear what the rule people are saying. You spread them out, right. And then like, so imagine you're doing this in a campaign context of you are an agent of that empire going around, and then you have these points of contact, these little quest givers all over the land who you can go to, who are unique every time, of a new profession, a new whatever, that you can go and get new tidbits information to piece together the narrative of what's happening in this place and how people are reacting to what's going on, because you're hearing it from different stories or hearing from different points of society.
Yeah, I like it. No, I think this is good. It's very insidious. It's very real.
Yeah. It's not like off the charts, like unreal.
The CIA uses tactics except fake, for the illusion magic
part. Yeah, but like the illusion magic is the thing.
But. Yeah, but beyond that, I mean, the CIA uses techniques like this. Like, the movie Wag the Dog is a perfect example of this, right?
I haven't used Wag the Dog.
Oh, it's so good.
Oh my God, I don't want to hear about you. It's so good. You got to see it.
You do.
You have terrible taste in movies sometimes.
I have excellent taste in movies. That they're all winners. I don't know what you're talking about here.
Totally.
But this one you would actually enjoy.
I think the key is leaning on the illusion magic and leaning on those like more fantastical bits of it all.
Yeah.
You know, I think this is also the problem with talking about something like Empire that is so
human.
So human that we can easily get stuck in stuff that is too relatable and too real because it's real.
I agree.
So, Ethan, tell me about your noodles.
So, I was thinking a lot about the Animorphs, like I said, you know, and it's these worms, they come in and they take over, and it's like the internal battle of the creature versus the person. You know, I thought about forms of coercion and violence. I'm like, I want something a little bit more sinister, but also a little bit sneakier. And so I started thinking about basically a pyramid scheme that begins with one warlock, one patron. And the patron, it can be a fiend, it can be a great old one, whatever. They go around masquerading as different people, forming individual contracts with leaders in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Based on their own individual needs, their own individual concerns, their own culture, their own whatever, right? In exchange for some sort of power. Very, very Sauron-like.
Yeah.
Except then the leader, the original, you know, contract, part of their contract is to spread the word, to evangelize, to go and recruit others. But there's a benefit. In so doing, they sort of pass down some of their powers, right? So in the DC comics, right, Shazam, Captain Marvel, gets his power from the wizard Shazam, but he can also give it to others. That's how Mary Marvel gets her powers. That's how Captain Marvel Jr. gets his powers. They get their power not directly from the wizard Shazam itself, but from Captain Marvel, the original champion. And so I like this idea of an empire that is not formed through, like I said, coercion or violence or evil psychic worms, but through negotiation, but through direct forming of contracts and pacts to create, in effect, a pyramid scheme. And that is how the empire forms.
So you have one champion who is now, who is like the number one guy for this patron, mm-hmm. let's say, Archfey, who they have a deal with and say, I will get you a whole bunch of people under your patronage.
Yep.
And they go out and talk to local leaders, kings, aristocrats, powerful queens, people, and
champions offer of industry.
And offer them also warlocky powers. Mm-hmm. You can cast spells too if you give me X amount of influence,
right?
Whatever. You give me this, and that thing is all what they want in return is always some amount of power, some amount of influence over them.
Mm-hmm.
And then
sort of like the mob, like, yeah. I'll ask for a favor.
Yes. And in the end, they've got enough of a web of these things that correct. They have a de facto empire, but mm-hmm. like a mob boss.
Right.
They do not hold title of emperor.
Correct.
Or have control of the land themselves.
Not directly, but they have indirect control.
Because they can exert influence on everyone that has made a contract with them and with their boss.
Correct.
Because I'm guessing this champion and this patron have an understanding that their goal is to create this kind of thing.
Correct. That and they are so, working together to do that.
So then the patron really can turn the screws on anybody who tries to get out of this.
Correct.
Because they have, you know,
they can also take away their power, the power that they've
granted.
They
can take away their power, or they can just, yeah, like, you don't want to piss off an archfey or whatever.
Right,
if you've broken a contract, then they might just kill you.
Right.
So then you've created a blackmailing network, and if you've got enough people that are split, mm-hmm. they don't necessarily know that each other are in the same network.
That's right. And so that is an important thing, is that the important part about it being a warlock is that warlocks in D&D have that Mask of Many Faces invocation where they can change their appearance, right? So all of these deals between these local leaders, aristocrats, kings, queens, whatever, have all been made from their mind with different people, but it's actually the same person.
Okay, yeah. That part coming back in is key, is that it's, they think they've made, like, if whoever the champion walks around as,
right.
no one will recognize them
correct.
In their true form.
Correct.
Or any of the people they've ever been, because they've just disguised themselves as random
correct.
Individuals every time.
Correct. And okay. it's not these deals are primarily targeting people of influence.
Yeah.
Right. But they're also going out there, like, making small deals with shop owners and people on the street and, you know,
yeah.
tradespeople, right? Like, who are out there working, and they're offering little boons, little gifts, little, you know, packed boons, right?
Yeah.
To make their lives easier, so that it's not, they're not just reliant on the heads, on those who are in control of power, but they are also building up a solid base. But incumbent in this is the importance of going out and evangelizing. I like the pyramid scheme nature of it, kind of like the multi-level marketing campaign of people going out and saying, you know, hey, girl, yeah, like, have you...
Yeah, you did once pitch an MLM of warlocks.
Yes.
So it's kind of that.
It is that. This is the final form of that.
Okay. Is doing it in a way where then you're creating a political network. But then, here's the thing. It's like, keeping it in the form of an empire, because that's the topic here. Mm-hmm. There's got to come a point where the champion stops bothering with getting new people, because one, you've got too many people to manage and it's too many packs, but then also you want to reap the rewards of what you've done. So you would sit, you'd rest and be like, okay, well, now we exert influence. Now we use the power.
There comes the tipping point.
And then you become this like imperial figure, this shadow cabal, which is literally what this is, where you...
But you step into the light.
But yeah, you start using that. Correct. And you might not step into the light per se, but you are at least like... I'm imagining you've got this champion who just sits in an actual office and just spends their day figuring out what they're doing within their empire, within this the territory that they have influence over, and making sure they maintain that influence of saying, oh, well, X person just died. We got to go make a pact with their successor or whatever, like maintaining that power, but then looking at things like trade routes and we're getting a cut of this, we're getting a cut of that, and like, oh, the development in this part needs to be improved, and oh, there's some poachers over here, I'll go deal with them. Like, actually governing in
actually
a way.
Governing, yeah.
Because they are getting back, like, tithing, they're getting back...
taxes, they're getting...
There's, like, I'm trying to think, like, what do they get out of this from day to day? Because if they're not in the limelight, they aren't the public face, they don't have an army as a result of that, like, under their control, they don't have... Because that would also require
not directly.
Yeah, but it would be like, they don't have an army loyal to them. You have a person loyal to you, but it's not the same thing.
Right. But my thinking of it, and I maybe should have said this earlier, is that these contracts are magical contracts, right? So that there is a loyalty, but it's not just loyalty for the sake of loyalty. Like you are bound to this person.
Yeah, but a soldier is just following orders from the guy. He doesn't give a fuck about your contract. He's not under a contract. He can walk. So you like his loyalty is far more fickle to you, the champion, the emperor.
Well, the idea
so
is
like
that
you're going through intermediaries for all of this stuff. So your control is therefore weaker. You need to get like figuring out how you gain from it. Is different. It's different than being an outright, I'm the obvious public face to everybody. Every citizen knows I'm the one like that everything's going to. I make decisions. It all comes to me. If you're in the background, the everyday citizen doesn't know that, and you have imperfect information as a result of that, and you can't exert influence over the individual citizens in the same way.
You can exert influence because they have been making their own pacts with their leaders. That's what I mean by the trickle-down effect, right? Is that?
But at what point is it too many people?
I say it's magic. You hand wave it. I don't think that matters so much. So
then you just have you just made a corporation.
Effectively, yeah. But less corporate in the sense that, you know, working in a big corporation like that, there is authority, but it's not, it's more focused towards the top. Like if I were to if you made a pact with the champion, right? Yeah. And then I made a pact with you, I would get power directly from you. So if the champion cut off power to you, the power would also get cut off to me. It's like irrigation.
Yeah. Everybody has to be in line.
Everyone has to be in line. And if it gets cut off at the source, the whole thing dries up.
Okay.
And so it's been this growing thing, you know, for a while.
Yeah.
That over time, you eventually can sort of start exerting, like you said, start exerting influence. There is a tipping point where you start centralizing, standardizing things. And then if you want, you can operate in a more typical imperial fashion. Or you can just continue to run behind the scenes if you want. You know, I always go back to this one line from the Justice League cartoon where one of the superheroes is fighting Lex Luthor and saying, you're trying to become all powerful. You're trying to become president. Lex Luthor looks at him and says, do you have any idea how much power I'd have to give up to become president?
That's a good line.
And I was like, that's sort of kind of where I'm thinking, right? Like, so yes, this person, this champion could step out into the limelight and become emperor.
I think the end goal of this is far more interesting if the archfey, the champion, says, I'm going in the light. Mm-hmm. Everybody who I have a pact with, come.
Yeah.
And create like a breakaway and just like secede from it's wherever. Like
sort of the packs all get activated at once.
And they just carve out their new space.
Yeah.
And be like, hey, this is now our land. If you're here, you're welcome to hang out and join. Like, do you want magic powers too? We can offer them. If right. not, go. Like, you know, right. or whatever. Like, but just like actually activate and siphon all these resources and these people from the various places that they were mm-hmm. and create this melding pot of cultures by like grabbing people from various kingdoms and stuff and mm-hmm. actually doing something that is because if it's just a shadowy cabal, that's where I'm struggling because I just think that that's sure. too like
banal.
And it's like what's the end goal? Just like, oh yeah, you just continue to operate in the shadows. Sure. But like, because you're, you know, but it's using it, taking it a step further, I think, making them actually just be like, fuck it. We're our own thing now.
Yeah.
I am an emperor.
Yeah.
And the champion says he's the emperor, but only he and the Archfey know he's not.
Right.
Because the Archfey doesn't have enough of an ego to care.
And it could be maybe the Archfey's goal is something as
quote-unquote it's worship simple. Them as a god.
It's worship them as a god, or maybe it's their tired of being in the Fey realm, and so they need all of these resources to break the dimensional barrier and open a gateway so they can come live in this world.
Maybe. I think that's cool because it's creating like enough of a state that you can channel all the resources to what your actual goal is
right.
in the open.
Right.
And if you say it's, we are building a portal to the Feywild, then you channel your resources to that and like, that's cool. Mm-hmm. And like, if you say like, if it's that the Archfey wants to become a deity, so mm-hmm. they need to be worshipped enough as such. So then the champion proclaims that the god of their new form state is the Archfey.
Right.
And then everybody worships them in public and they deify.
Right. They gain enough power and
from
all these this sudden influx of followers
that they can break. Worshippers, like,
They can break into divinity,
yes.
which normally is impossible.
Exactly. It's create the motive at the top that makes it so that doing something beyond just hanging out is mm-hmm. worth it. Mm-hmm. I think both of those are cool. I think I'm more partial to the deity thing, but also the Feywild thing is pretty cool.
They both work.
Yeah, they both work.
Yeah.
Like, I think in equal standing. So yeah. I think that is a better version of
it. I agree. I think that makes a lot more sense. And for me, what was interesting is more, you know, we've seen empires form through violence. We've seen them form through psychic. We've already discussed like psychic takeovers and eye brainworms and that like the ones that live in RFK Jr. You know, we talked about all of these things and I was trying to think, well, what are ways you could do it? And I started realizing, well, you know, anything that really could be as a substitute for a zombie movie, right? You know, if you think about what's that show? The video game, The Last of Us. Mm-hmm. Right. And it was the spores that turned people into these zombies. It's like, oh, well, it could be imperial influence spread through magical spores, or it could be nanites if you're in a sci-fi world.
Yeah.
Right? I'm like, you could do all of these things. These are all interesting, but I wanted something a little bit more like a little bit sneakier, like not more as kick the door in, more personal. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because these are all leaders who think they're making deals with different people, but then to realize they're all the same person, but they're trapped in the deal.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's where it's like the sleeper cell activation really works for revealing to all of them how sneaky it was and how they've all been duped.
Yeah.
But at that point, they probably don't care.
They've been getting they can all cast Eldritch Blast now.
And maybe at that point,
that's pretty great.
And maybe through this pact, they've been like, the Archfey can channel some sort of like affinity to like, they can channel in a way that makes them start to, like deep down, love this thing that they've never met, this Archfey.
Yeah.
And so then when it's revealed, this Archfey is actually,
you're like, oh, there it is.
And
there's the thing.
And then they're relieved.
Yeah.
And they're happy because they're like, oh, but I love this thing. Yeah. And it's like, well, you've been like, an umbilical cord has been feeding you those nutrients for a long time and you didn't even know it.
Yeah. And maybe it's something just as simple as, like I said, you know, the magic is shared downstream, mm-hmm. but then when the Archfey comes full force in, there's just a surge of magic down the stream, like down through all the packs, and so you get like a high from it.
Yeah,
like it could be something as simple as that, like where they're not actually changing your mind, but more like creating an addiction.
Maybe,
and I think that's kind of interesting too.
Yeah,
so that's the story of my empire.
All right. Well, then why don't we heat up some of this frozen lasagna we got here? I think it only takes like a minute in the microwave.
I think so.
All right.
It's not frozen. It's just chilled. Reheat those leftovers, Kyle.
And mine looks a little frozen, but we'll see.
What kind of microwave you got that can make it frozen?
My microwave is kind of weak, so.
Fair.
Yeah. All right. So my little speedy option here. An empire thriving on nobody actually being on the thrones of any of their neighboring kingdoms because they keep disappearing all of their neighboring rulers through other planes of existence.
That's funny.
Where they have like hags coming through the ethereal plane and just grabbing the king from their bedroom and just whoop and just disappear. And there's no trace of violence, no trace of anything. They just disappear. So everyone keeps thinking that all these rulers are just like noping out and it's a dereliction of duty and nobody wants the job. Hmm. The job is so hard, no one can do it. So they keep all disappearing or they keep all running away. So people think, but it's really that they're being pulled without a trace through another plane of existence and murdered. So they're not coming back. And then while there's like nobody in charge, the empire is just kind of roll in and go, hey, we'll take over from here now.
Yeah. Like you seem to be struggling. Let us help.
Yeah. Like, oh, like there's no one on that throne. Well, we'll take care of it. Yeah. And then they just boop, 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 just by disappearing people. So that's mine.
That's good. I like that.
What's your frozen lasagna? I'm sorry. Ding.
I already sort of mentioned it a little bit, but I keep thinking about the magic spores. Like I like the idea of it's not even necessarily something uh-huh. where there is a distinct emperor will to create this empire. It's just these spores exert a mind control effect over people. And so the leader becomes someone who's cultivating these spores. And they become like the gardener. Like that's kind of their title. It's not emperor, it's a gardener. Mm-hmm. And that is how they exert their control and influences all through the use of these magic spores.
So
subjugation to the empire is more like a disease that spreads through the air, like an allergy or something, right? Like if you just release all of these spores into the air, that's how you get people under your whim.
I like it. Yeah. All right. What's stuck for you, Ethan?
I like what you said about, because I'd sort of envisioned my emperor as being sort of a shadow. I sort of envisioned my empire as being a shadow empire. I think you're right that the magic happens, so to speak, when they step into the light and form their own thing. I think that's a really good addition that I hadn't really focused on. I had sort of envisioned more of a mob boss thing mostly because of that line of like, do you have any idea of how much power I'd have to give up to become president?
Yeah.
But I you are right that is what makes it fun and interesting.
Yeah.
And I think you could play with it. Like you play almost like an addiction with the power, you know, warlocks all the way down.
Yeah.
I think it's just really fun, but I'm still stuck for your world. I'm still stuck on who are the sleeper agents, like who are these teams that are going in and learning about this culture? How long do they have to be there? How deeply embedded do they have to be? How do they send information? Like, I'm just thinking about that and sort of the how do you know who you can trust mm-hmm. when you're in that society? Mm-hmm. So yeah, what about you? What stuck for you?
I think it's the in the context of the coming into the light thing, and it's what is the arch phase end goal. Mm-hmm. I think like the two end goals we have are really cool of trying to become a deity and trying to create a portal to the Feywild so they can just freely kind of roam and be a little bit more free. I think that is such a it's that transitionary period of we're becoming a state and here's what we want actually. And then everyone would be like, okay, I guess we're all on board for that.
I don't really have a choice.
And just having like a singular state goal being so uniquely sought after and mm-hmm. pursued, I think is really cool. So that's what stuck for me.
Beyond just like power for the sake of power.
Yes.
Yeah.
Power for the sake of power is kind of boring.
Yeah.
But it's also pretty standard and pretty normal
and
because
makes
it's like
sense.
It's relatable.
Yeah.
That's what happens.
Yeah,
people want power for the sake of it.
Right.
But then it's like, well, I want the power because I need to do one thing for me. Right. I have all the. I'm powerful. I'm an archfey. I can do a lot of shit. But I need these humans. I need the masses to help me with something. That's what's stuck for us. Yeah. Let us know what's stuck for you.
email is in the show notes.
Thanks for listening. Goodbye.
Peace.